Just imagine if you were the first person to discover the properties of gold, and like, and no one else could, like, well, it's just like a, this malleable metal. That's like, why would you want to use that? It's kind of like useless. It's a very fortunate time. Everyone who is like not partaking, or at least like looking into it, or at least learning about it, you're doing yourself a huge disservice, because it's like the best. This is the most unique time. Think of like at cosmological scales, like the what's the Earth, like 4.7 billion years or something. And like, we're at this one moment in time where we create this technology that is perfect scarcity, mathematical scarcity based off the laws of physics. And you're here at this point in time. It's like, and you think it's a scam. Can you talk about the biggest fumble of your like entire existence? I can't think of anything more important to be doing other than building on Bitcoin. It's, nothing else seems as important. I have like this like really anti like authoritarian thing. I think it was driven by that like trauma experience as a kid, just like always being told to get off my computer when I was like, that's all I want to do. Yeah. So yeah. So when Apple's telling me that I can't do something, I'm like, I want to burn you to the ground now. Like my number one focus is to like build around you. I always say like a conversation at a bar is the most decentralized thing you can do. It's like completely peer to peer. Doesn't require any centralized architecture, infrastructure, no cloud involved. You're just having a beer with someone. So I think what we're doing, what peer-to-peer technology is simply restoring that human thing we've been doing for hundreds of thousands of years. So I think it's worthwhile.
Greetings and salutations, my fellow plebs. My name is Walker, and this is the Bitcoin Podcast. Bitcoin continues to create new blocks every 10 minutes. The value of one Bitcoin is still one Bitcoin. And if you're listening to this right now, remember, you are still early. If you're not already, go ahead and subscribe to this show wherever you're watching or listening, and share it with your friends, family, and strangers on the internet. If you want to follow me and the show on Noster and X, just head to the show notes to grab the links. If you're enjoying the Bitcoin Podcast and want to support it by becoming a paid subscriber, you can download the Fountain app, search for the Bitcoin Podcast, and subscribe by paying with Bitcoin via Lightning or fiat via card. You'll get access to ad-free episodes and early releases of select content, plus you'll help support this show. Head to the show notes for product discount links, go to walkeramerica.substack.com to get episodes emailed to you, and head to bitcoinpodcast.net for everything else. Without further ado, let's get into this Bitcoin talk. Uncle Jim 21 on Noster, he built a tool called Pull That Up Jamie,
and oh, really?
It's pretty sweet. So like he walked me through it, and I met him in DC. We just got to chat, and it was like one of those things where, you know, you're chatting with someone. It's like, oh, you know, like what do you do around the old Bitcoin space? And he's like, oh, you know, like we're this and that, and like I built this like thing called Pull That Up Jamie. I'm like, no way! Like I kept seeing Marty Bent using this all the time. But it's basically a place for you to, it'll automatically archive your podcast episodes and then allow you, like, it'll automatically like creates like lo-fi clips for you. It does all the stuff. I can publish to Noster straight from it.
Wow.
You know, does other like summaries and stuff. So it's like, it's pretty sweet. But the name, like it's pullthatupjamie.ai. And it's like, that's a great site name.
When, you know, like, when I hear that, I just assume it's like an AI agent that's like, replicates Jamie like during the podcast, and you can just ask it to like pull stuff up. I think that'd be cooler.
Honestly, Jim, if you're listening to this, that would be pretty sweet. Like that's honestly like, yeah, I need to be able to basically like have an assistant that's listening that I can just kind of vibe chat with to be like, to literally right. Say like, pull that up, Jamie. And they could pull that up during,
I can just do like web searches like instantly. It'd probably be way faster than Jamie. So
honestly, like I could probably do that like with ChatGPT or like with Grok at this point. But the problem is that like, I feel like a lot of those times, those conversations will time out. It would also just keep like trying to talk to you. Like if, you know, you need to like have it like set up so it had that trigger word of like, pull that up, Jamie. Yeah. And then you'd probably be good to go. But yeah, I want to give it another shout out. I want to give a shout out to Ben Justman, because he sent me, we're doing I'd call it a value for vino collaboration. Where basically nice. It's like the coolest thing ever. Like I'm just going to drink his wine on this show, Peony Lane wine, which is delightful. And he's going to send me wine to drink. And so like, that's like, honestly, like kind of awesome. And like, I think we need more of that.
One of my favorite things is like having a like wine subscription every month. So if I could just like pay in sats to get wine delivered to my door every month, that'd be ideal.
I'm pretty sure Ben has.
They don't ship to Canada. I asked him before.
That's your first problem.
We do have Privado, I think. I think they're on Noster as well. If that's how you say their name, so. I should ask him actually.
Dude, I love that the kind of small business marketplace aspect of Noster has. It feels like it's been like, kind of taking off. I mean, like it's still at a small scale. But like there's a lot of folks now that are using Noster as the way that they are like marketing their small business or even like taking orders. And I think that's a super like a super great use case for this, especially if you can like literally take orders through a Zap. Like that's pretty sweet.
It's probably one of the most important things for the long-term success of like the Zap economy, I've always called it, and like Zap commerce, because if you don't have people like actually using it for stuff day to day, then it's still just like a toy, and it's fine as a toy. It's like, oh, you know, yeah. You know, you get drunk and you start tipping people on Noster like I do occasionally. but it's not like that's not going to make like Zaps and Noster succeed in the long run. So yeah, we definitely need those marketplaces to get going. And I was just talking to, I think it was like Calvadev, his name is, in Portland, and he's working on a lot of the Shopster stuff, I think, a lot of the marketplace stuff. And yeah, he really like, I'm like, I didn't realize there's so much stuff going on, so I'm really excited for that. They're doing like milk distribution of some kind, because like sometimes it's just hard to get like raw milk, or it's like legal in your part of the world. Like in Canada, it's like illegal. Like in Canada, we're not even allowed to have like medium rare burgers at restaurants. Like you have fentanyl on the street.
I don't know if that's a joke or if
it's
like
not a joke. I'm not even joking.
Seriously.
Yeah. If you Google it, you'll see Canada. You can't ask for a medium rare burger in a restaurant in Canada. But you can get like friggin' fentanyl off the street. It's just the most ridiculous. You can't get raw milk either. It's illegal.
Is there like a secret code word you can use if like you want a medium rare burger? So that you tell them like, well,
it's just not like, in the culture. So like if you were to ask that order at a restaurant, they'd be like, what do you mean? Like, it's just not like something that you do. It's just, you just go get a burger and it's just like well done or something.
It's just like a piece of leather.
Leather. Yeah.
You know, I will say, like, you know, I who doesn't like to make fun of Canada, but I've made a lot of incredibly based Bitcoin and Noster friends that are Canadians, such as yourself, like, but like the countless numbers. And, like, I feel so privileged because I never knew that many Canadians. Like, I could probably count the Canadians I knew on like both hands growing up. And then it's like now, like, I have a ton of Canadian friends and they're all super based. Obviously, there's a selection bias there because they're Bitcoin and Noster people. But like, I think there's a lot of hope for Canada still.
You know? Yeah, I mean, I think we had a lot of the, or I don't know, it just seems to be like a lot of like Bitcoiner engineers are here. I think we had the first Bitcoin ATM in Vancouver, like in the world. You know, obviously we have like NVK's company. We have, you know, a lot of people like coin cards here in Vancouver. So yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of cool Canadians and we're actually having a conference tomorrow at the convention center in Vancouver. Is it tomorrow?
Nice.
Oh, maybe tomorrow or Saturday. So that's gonna be fun. It's like one of the first like ones in Vancouver, which is gonna be exciting.
Oh, that's sweet. I've only been to Canada a couple of times. I've enjoyed it each time very much. But then like it's like I'm just getting like a little taste of it. I'm not seeing all the insanity that happens, you know, but behind the scenes. Like, oh, it's like so nice to visit. And then like I come back and I read some ridiculous news story, or I find out that you can't have a gosh darn medium rare burger, and it's like, what the hell is this? What's this place coming to?
Yeah, freedom is just like much more suppressed here, and it's kind of just been normalized. We don't really think about it. Like, we don't have guns, we don't have like the freedoms that you guys have, and but
it's
people
really
just like go on with their
there,
lives,
right?
Oh like, yeah, it's like you need to basically like get a yearly documentation, like recheck. You have to like redo the test like every year or something. It's like very annoying to have a gun.
Yeah, that's like, I mean, in Illinois we have to like, I'm originally from Wisconsin, and there, I mean, you know, like it's easier than in Illinois to get a gun, but it's still like people who don't own guns in America like you can just like walk into a store and you walk out with a gun. And it's like, no. In most places, this is not the case. You walk into a store and you have a federal background check run on you, and you probably can't leave with the gun like that same day. But like in Illinois, you have to have a FOID card, firearm owner identification card, and that like expires after a certain point. Like, and it takes a while to get because it's the government, so like they just take a long time to issue anything. You got to, of course, pay for it. And it's. I remember I was going to buy a gun in Wisconsin once, and I wanted to get just like another handgun. And I like had a great handgun picked out. I had exactly what I wanted. And then I go to the, you know, the cashier. I'm like, okay, you know, here's my ID. You're Illinois. Like, you know, do you have your FOID card? Yep. Okay, here it is. And here, this is the gun I want right here. And the guy's like, oh no, I can't sell you a handgun because you're an Illinois resident. I'm like, oh, but you can sell, like, what do you mean I can buy a handgun in Illinois? Like, but like, he's like, no, I can't sell you a handgun in Wisconsin. Like, what can I buy? He's like, well, you can buy any long gun. I'm like, so I can buy this semi-automatic 12-gauge shotgun, this semi-automatic 12-gauge Maxxis shotgun, which is what I ended up buying. He's like, yeah, that's fine. But it's like, so I, like, it just, these laws are so stupid because it's like, okay, I can't buy a small pistol, but I can literally buy a semi-automatic 12-gauge shotgun, which will leave multiple giant holes in you. Like that. But it's like, okay, good, great job, government. You did it. You know, you kept us safe by making the law-abiding people, making their lives absolutely hell. Because it's not like criminals have any problems getting illegal guns. You know, it's just, I digress. But it's just, that kind of stupidity just is so infuriating to me.
I think the future is going to be, like, especially for us Canadians, is like once 3D printing gets just so good and you can just like press a button and have a weapon and like don't have to tell anyone about it, then it's like, I don't know. I just kind of see that happening, especially if governments keep on, you know, going down this like crazy path that they're going, especially with all the UK madness. And I don't know, it's a scary place out there. So especially with, like, you know, Bitcoiners who like have been in Bitcoin since like 2010, and you know, you've been like holding, you know, massing Bitcoin and like preparing for this future, and people, I'm at this point now where it's like, I used to be like a huge proselytizer of Bitcoin. I used to like go tell everyone about it. Now it's kind of like, maybe I should shut up and and just like keep to myself. And because you see all those like kidnappings and stuff happening, and I don't know.
So many kidnappings in France, weirdly. Like that seems to be the new place. Like if you want to kidnap somebody and take their cryptocurrency,
Target people who like in places where there's no like weapons are outlawed, yeah, right? It's like you have less chance of getting shot.
Yeah, it's like you if you want to do that to somebody in America, like you, like
it's a very, you're rolling the dice.
That person has a gun, like, yeah, like I, you know, it has like more than one gun. Like there, you come into my house, you're going to be met with a lot.
And they're
of
like,
explosive
they're like,
force.
Finally, someone came into my house. This is gonna. Yeah, like, I've been waiting for this.
I have literally been preparing for this. Like you have no idea what you just walked into. And now, you know, I get to. Well, yeah, it doesn't go well. Don't want to get banned from YouTube for saying stuff about violence though. So,
oh shit. But, sorry.
No, I'm just kidding. I don't give a shit. Eventually it's going to happen. And that's why I'm so glad Noster exists. Cause we're live streaming this on Noster to right now, 88 people, which is nice. So shout out to everybody who is listening to this live on Noster on zap.stream. I want to get into a bunch of stuff with you, Will, because like there's a lot to talk about. I want to talk about what you're building at Domus, like what's new over there. I want to talk about, honestly, like, maybe this is where we kind of keep rolling into, like, what's happening in the UK and how sort of the fiat clown world is doing a very good job of, like, making the case for why you would want Noster. And, like, not just in the UK, obviously, but they're just one of the most absurd examples right now. Maybe we start with that. I also want to talk about, like, generally growing Noster and what people like at the individual level can do versus like as the user level versus like what you think at the dev level needs to be done. You know, like is this a solution with a technical like or a technical solution, or is this something that's more of just like, hey, adoption takes time. But maybe let's start. Okay, first of all, for anyone who doesn't know you, JB55, Will Castron, you created Domus. This is your third time on the show, right?
I think so. Yes.
Yeah. Welcome back. Third time's the charm.
Thank you.
Stoked to have you back. I've enjoyed every one of our conversations, both on the air here and in person. Let's just because you brought it up, let's talk about the UK a little bit. So, like the what is it? It's the Online Safety Act is the one. Okay, maybe we take a step back. All of these like online safety things, they all sound really like nice in theory, where it's like, well, we just want to keep children safe. Like, don't you want to keep children safe? Like, don't, like, because if you don't, like who's going to be like, no, I want children to be in danger. Like, you know, they put out these red herrings, these false flag operations that make it sound like, well, this is just about, you know, keeping children safe. And yet there are some other unintended consequences, but maybe they're actually totally intended. But like, how do you look at these things as they're playing out? Like, I feel like this is going to keep accelerating. in places where people don't push back. And clearly in the UK, there is not enough like actual pushback to this. Like, it seems kind of insane that people aren't like, I mean, they're up in arms, but like not enough to make any difference, apparently.
Yeah, it's and wasn't it like 80% of people just like were like approved of the of the whole thing?
Yeah.
So I don't even know how if that's true or if that's just like propaganda or the one thing I don't understand is why is this all happening? It all tends to happen at the same time. I'm not like I'm not like a super conspiratorial person, but you know, sometimes you just like look at how things have played out, especially like during the pandemic. It's almost like they're like testing to see how the population would react to certain things, and then. You know, and now they're like, okay, let's just push again and see what happens. And it's just, that's what it feels like to me. It feels like they're just experimenting to see how people react as like a psyop. I don't know. Maybe it's not as coordinated as that. Maybe they're legitimately people are in just in the government and they're like worried about online safety. But I don't know. It just, it seems weird that it happens all at the same time. And it's always like backed by corporate sponsors. And so obviously, you know, maybe the thing I think about is like follow the money, like who is profiting from this? Like, you know, obviously having control of a lot of systems, like, you know, gives certain people's advantages. I don't know. I think I haven't done like the deep analysis of like why it's happening. I'm just like a passive observer and I'm like, okay, that's interesting. And for me, I just see it as like a positive thing for me, like in terms of things I'm building. Cause I'm like showcasing, this is why I'm working on this stuff. Cause we have to prepare for a future when this is actually going to happen. And it's like, I didn't think it'd be happening this quickly. So I thought I'd have a lot more time to like build out and like get everything ready. But if they want to fast track it, then fine. And then I'll start, you know, working even harder. But it's kind of crazy.
If you're getting a lot of zaps on Noster for your fire memes or feet pics, you should probably get the majority of those sats into your own self-custody by going to bitbox.swiss/walker and using the promo code Walker for 5% off the fully open source, easy to use Bitcoin only Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. And while you're at it, get your Bitcoin off the exchange and into your own custody as well. Bitcoin is ripping and soon your stack will be worth a heck of a lot more in fiat value than it is today. So now is the perfect time to make sure you have your security locked down with Bitbox. And I really cannot emphasize enough that the Bitbox O2 is easy as hell to use. Whether you are brand new to Bitcoin and it's your very first time setting up a hardware wallet, so you're understandably a little bit nervous, or you are a well-seasoned psychopath. Again, it's Bitcoin only and fully open source. You can head to their GitHub and verify for yourself. No need to trust me or Bitbox. When you go to bitbox.swiss/walker and use the promo code Walker, not only do you get 5% off, but you also help support this podcast. So thank you.
It is insane. And it's like, you know, I think like even Orwell couldn't have conceived of how dystopian things would get in the UK so quickly. Like that's really like the sad thing. It's just like, and it's the absurdity of it too, right? It's just that like none of this stuff, it's like nobody thought through it that much. Or I guess there's two sides to it. Either nobody thought through it that much and genuinely are too stupid to realize all of the downstream implications of these terrible policies that ultimately restrict individual liberties under the guise of, you know, protecting children, which, yeah, we all want to keep the kids safe, right? But like,
yeah,
there are trade-offs in things. Or like they literally know exactly what they're doing. They know that this is they're, you know, doing this in a deceitful way. And they know that it's really just a tool of, you know, totalitarianism to try and restrict people's freedom of communication, freedom of expression. Like people are, like the fact that you can just legitimately get arrested for a social media post in the UK is just nuts. Like that, just right on its
face. They'll come to your door and like knock on your door and arrest you. And I'm like, I've seen videos like that since 10 years ago. Like they've been doing that for a while. It's kind of crazy.
You can't silently pray within like a certain distance of an abortion clinic. I'm forgetting the woman's name. But there was like a 70-year-old grandma who was literally just arrested for this. And that's just, it doesn't matter how you feel about the issue of abortion. Like that does not matter. It's not the point here. The point is you should be able to silently pray. You're not hurting anyone. That's part of like free expression. But then it's like, well, the UK just like doesn't really have that. Like they actually don't. They don't have something that's like the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. It's not that to that extent. And like they're paying the price for it. And I do think the fact that like you're not an armed population, the government feels a lot more free to come in and subjugate you and to do ridiculous things. Like, because there's no, like, what are you going to do? They're making knives illegal in the UK. Like, there was a whole push to like only sell blunted knives. Did you see this? It was like, it was nuts. Cause shockingly people are stabbing each other with knives. Cause it turns out that even when you don't have guns, people still find ways to kill each other. Who would have thought? But like, I don't know. It's just like, it just, I think you're right. It just feels like they push more and more and more. Like, what can we get away with? What can we get away with now? But they're really making the case for why you would want a censorship-resistant open protocol for communication. So, like, at least there's that.
Yeah, and we have, like, this, like, idea in software. I guess not even software. It's just, like, in general, like, engineering or maybe even more general. It's just like Murphy's Law, right? If anything, if you set up the structure in ways that it can fail, it will fail. Just because inherently people who are not that smart get into these positions because those positions attract people who just like are not there for like an intellectual reason. They're there for like power or money or greed. So, and those types of people just don't tend to be like second order effect thinkers. Like, I feel like some of the smartest people I know when they, especially like, this is a lot of Bitcoiners too. When I talk to a lot of Bitcoiners, you know, you'll be like, oh, if I make this change to this now, to the, let's say to the protocol, what are the second order effects that are going to happen if I make this change? And like, the reason why it's so interesting, I find, to talk to Bitcoiners is because they think like 2 or 4 or 5 or 6, 10 steps down the road, and they like, no, we can't change the block size because of X, Y, Z and all these implications. But the shitcoiners, they're like, they don't think two orders down the line. So they're just like, let's just make the blocks bigger and everything will be great. So I know, I just see it the same way where it could be like, you know, they're doing it for malicious reasons, but it's probably more likely just they're not thinking about the second order effects. And, so yeah, I don't know. It's who knows.
I think have you ever read the book The Psychopath Test by John Ronson?
No,
it's a great book. It's a pretty like short book too. If you want, it's an enjoyable read. I think I read it like a decade ago, but it's still very relevant. Basically, it's like 1% of the general population of people. So not people in prison. Like people in prison, this percentage is higher, but like 1% of the general population are psychopaths. Like actual like clinical psychopaths, it may be even a little bit like higher than that. So 1 in 100 people that you meet is going to be a psychopath statistically, like incapable of feeling empathy, like literally can't do it, can't put themselves in your shoes, and is just a narcissistic egomaniac who is also going to be really good at being charismatic and getting, you know, and probably pretty eloquent and good at getting what they want. And those people tend to gravitate towards positions of power. Because it's all about self-aggrandizement, right? And so, I mean, I don't know what the percentage of psychopaths in politics is, like in high offices of politics, but I'm guessing it's higher than 1%. Like, I feel like it'd be a safe thing to bet that it's higher than Gen Pop. And so, but then it's like, you're right. I think a lot of these people are just incredibly incompetent. So you've got this mix of like actually highly intelligent psychopaths and then super just mid-curve smooth brains. And that's basically like, and that's government, you know, and they're okay. Then that's not entirely fair. And there are some bright spots of people who actually give a shit and are there because, you know, they want to change things and make them better for the next generation. But those people are in the tiny, tiny minority, sadly. Grateful they exist, but they're outnumbered, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is why I've always like somehow as Bitcoiners and as like people who are just like passive people, they don't crave power. They just want to like live peacefully. Somehow, I mean, Satoshi, this is why Satoshi genius. He was able to like create this structure which fights against all of that power, against all of that coercion and all of that like force. And they did it in the most passive way possible, just like writing code and just like putting it out there. And now like we're winning. Like it's kind of crazy. And we don't have to do any violence. Like, can you think of a more poetic and beautiful thing to like that's actually unfolding? It's amazing. You just have to sit there and do nothing while like basically incentives drive human action into like proper, you know, into like healthy directions. It's kind of crazy if you think about it.
It really is. Like it's almost like, wow, like no way this would work, right? But then it's like it's working right in front of our eyes. Like Bitcoin is winning. And that's not to say that they're like we don't need to remain ever vigilant and build out all of the kind of tangential solutions that are required to make sure that we can, you know, progress along that sovereignty spectrum as far as possible. But like at the core level, like Bitcoin is winning. And that's an amazing, and we did it without needing to drone strike, you know, a bunch of brown kids, which is just amazing. Like you, it turns like, wow.
What a feature.
This is crazy.
No drone strikes required.
They said it couldn't be done. They said you had to drone strike the brown kid.
U.S. military is like, what? What do you mean?
Like hold on, guys. This is completely changing the game.
This is bullshit. This is a scam.
Yeah, no, there's no way. We should just drone strike a few brown kids just to, you know, just to be safe. You know, just for good measure. On Bitcoin's
just for public quota.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, it's nuts. I'm curious, too, like, how are you... Okay, how do you balance, as you were building on Nostr, how do you balance kind of the, like, you know, like, fuck the state freedom tech side of this with like, hey, I want to build a nice app with a pleasant user interface that encourages people to come and interact in a pro-social way? Or like, are those two actually, like, two sides of the same coin? And, like, you know, by getting more people on the network, you achieve those other more, like, freedom-minded goals. Do you think about that at all?
I don't think about it enough. I think I definitely like 99% think of like ways to fuck the state and to fuck people who are assholes. Like, so that's why sometimes it's kind of my flaw, and like I probably should focus more time on like. But that's why my team is really good. Like I have, we have a good designer. Roberto is a great designer. I got Daniel. We're helping me with iOS. We have a whole like Node Deck team. We got Vanessa. Terry, like so many people are helping me now, and like, and they care about those things, especially Eric. Eric is really good. He's on the iOS team. He basically just makes it pretty and make it user friendly. So I'm just like, I don't know, if I didn't have those guys, I feel like I would just be building like a lightning node into the into the which I'm doing on Node Deck, which I have a lightning node in there now.
Talk about that a little bit. Give us an update on like where you're at with Node Deck. What's happened recently with Damas? Like, what have you guys been focusing on?
Yeah, I mean, I saw everyone having too much fun with all the other stuff, so I'm like, well, I want to have fun too. I always believe that, though. I always believe that the other stuff is what's going to really convince if anything. Like, I don't think we're just going to convince them on a new social media experience because everyone's already oversaturated with social media and everyone's already on Twitter and other places. So the only thing that we're actually, that's going to work is that we attract like, hey, you can use all these other software that all work together. And like, that's that would be something you could use outside of just the social media use case. So, you know, I built Damas iOS and it was great for like a Twitter like clone, but you know, it's not like I'm going to start loading more and more features into that because I'm just trying to keep that simple, try to keep it easy to use. So just being able to have a platform where we can build new ideas quickly without being censored by the App Store, censored by Apple. Yeah, Apple and governments and stuff. I needed a new platform to be able to build my ideas in a free way. So, that's what Node Deck is. It's a new multi-platform client I've been working on for like 3 years now. Not like full-time 3 years, but probably more heavily in the past year. And one of the biggest focuses I've been working on the past 4 months is getting the Android version working. So I don't want to spoil it, and I'm technically under contract, so I can't say when, but I would say if you want to learn more, go to Bitcoin Asia at the end of the month.
Okay.
And you might hear an interesting announcement from me about that. But other than that, yeah, once we have that launch, it's going to be amazing. Then we can like launch all of our ideas off that platform, and it's going to be it's going to be completely censorship resistant. I don't have to worry about fucking Apple telling me I can't do shit, which is like literally, as a Bitcoiner, it's the most infuriating thing. I think this is like a childhood trauma thing I think I had when my parents would just always try to tell me to get off my computer for just spending too much time on your computer. And I have like this like really anti like authoritarian thing. I think it was driven by that like trauma experience as a kid, just like always being told to get off my computer when I was like, that's all I want to do. Yeah. So when Apple's telling me that I can't do something, I'm like, I want to burn you to the ground now. Like my number one focus is to like build around you. So
can you give a for folks that, and if they want a deeper dive, like I think we discussed the various things that Apple has done to make your life a pain in the ass in the past two times you've been on, but can you give kind of like the brief history of the headaches of dealing with Apple's absurdity?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's kind of like arguing with your girlfriend, and it's like, you know, it's not a logical argument, and it's just like an emotional thing, and you're like, you realize you can't make like logical arguments to like, and this is like what it's like talking to a reviewer at Apple. It's like, I'm like, they're like, you violated this guideline, and I'm like, No, I didn't, because this guideline says that this I can't do it if it's being used to buy digital stuff. And I'm like, well, a Zap is not buying digital things. It's just you're giving someone a tip. And they're like, no, you're still violating. I'm like, no, I'm not. And so it's just like you can't even argue with them in a reasonable way. I don't know. So that was the first thing. So they told us they would remove us from the App Store. That was in like a couple years ago. And so, yeah, we had to remove the Zap button. We added a back door so you could still turn it on, because like, that's how much I hate Apple. I don't care if I got if they found out I got banned. I still wanted people to try the Zaps. And then there's a whole, you know, the Epic Games lawsuit, which, you know, we got some ground back. You're able to at least link to outside payment methods, which we still haven't done in Domus, which we should probably do. Like right now, if you sign up for Lightning within Domus iOS, we don't link out, but now we can, so we should probably add that. So I'm like, okay, well, maybe now that they've been sued and they've been like caught in contempt of court and all this horrible shit, maybe I can just like try turning it on again. And so we did, and it got re-enabled for like 2 months. I'm like, oh, cool. Maybe for some reason I can have it again. But no, like another iteration of the review, they're like, no, you have to remove it again. So it's just like this constant back and forth of just, and it's really hard to like plan to build new features around Zaps, because it's like you built all this code up and now we have to like turn it off and like turn it on again. It's just very disruptive. And I don't know, we're a small team. Like I don't have full time to just like argue with a fucking reviewer. And it's just like, I don't know. There's something about it that just feels so wrong. It's like, you're not my parent or something. You know, it's like, why are you telling me this when it's completely inconsequential? You're a $1 trillion company and you're giving me a hard time about something that's not going to have any impact on your bottom line, like at all. So
and you're
I don't
debating know. So that, semantics where you're wrong. Like you're yeah. very easily provably wrong in your like classification of these. Like they're yeah. it's not buying a digital good. Like it literally yeah. just doesn't violate the policy. Like the policy aside, yeah. like we can talk about how stupid that is, but it doesn't violate it. Like that was what was always just like blowing my mind, is like this is just so painfully stupid.
It made me realize that the guidelines aren't really real. They're really yeah. just like they're there and it doesn't matter if you follow them or not. They will strong arm you into removing your app and doing whatever they want. Just because like they don't, it's not like it's a contract, you know, it's just a guideline and they can change at any moment. And yeah. so I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's honestly, it's very similar, like to go on the other side of this. It's very similar to like how YouTube handles things when it comes to content moderation. Like you saw people like, you know, BTC Sessions getting deplatformed. Thankfully, you know, after a massive public uproar, he was put back on. But like the fact that he was even flagged in the first place for, you know, violating community guidelines, which are just kind of like, what did I violate? Like, some stuff. You just did bad stuff and you're out, you know? And like Simply Bitcoin, same thing happened to them. Like, I'm sure it'll like probably happen to me at some point, except I'll probably actually violate the community guidelines. But you know, that's okay. We have Nostra's a backup, but it's the same thing where it's like, you have these, I mean, essentially like these tech monopolies that know that they can get away with doing whatever they want because you don't have any other option. Like you know, on one side, like, you know, okay, like you want to distribute through Apple, like great. You know, play by our rules, which will change, but you don't want to distribute. Okay. Like just say goodbye to like the vast, you know, over half the market, like just say goodbye to it. Like you don't have access to it now. And same thing with YouTube. It's like, oh, you want to be top of the funnel for people learning about Bitcoin and Nostr? Like, okay, you know, play by our rules, because otherwise we'll ban you, you bad little boy. But I don't know. It's frustrating. So I'm sorry for making you relive it. So Zaps, because I mean, I have like the I remember you sent me like the workaround like very early on after they banned it. And I was like, oh, sweet, okay. Not going to say anything about this, but okay, it's working again. I mean, do you think that they're going to actually make any sort of long-term policy change, or do you think this is just a headache you're going to keep having to deal with?
So right now we can't update Domus. So they haven't told us they're going to remove the app like last time, but they said that like basically until we remove the Zap button again, we can't push updates, which is really frustrating for our users. So I'm at the point now where it's like, you know, there's a lot of people telling me that the workaround is to just do what Primal did, which is something I'm going to have to consider, which is basically, I mean, a lot of people, this is a theory. They think that once we add an in-app purchase where you can buy sats, then basically all those other guidelines, they don't really apply anymore, because if I think the way that Apple looks at it is that It's like an in-app it's an in-game currency they're purchasing, and all the zaps you send over the app are like an in-game currency. Like, I think that's how they think about it. They don't really think about it.
So you pay for them once when you buy them, you pay your haircut to Apple, and then it's like, okay, we don't care now.
I think that's how it works. So we're probably going to do that. The only tricky thing is that, you know, we've always prided ourselves on being able to like use the app anywhere in the world. So I'm never going to do something if it like restricts our wallet to like a specific locale. But I think we could do it. Like, I have a Lightning node. I could just set up an in-app purchase to like get sats out of my node. And it's like super dubious legally, and because I become like an exchange and stuff, but I might just do it anyway. Cause I feel like, you know, you'd ask for forgiveness later. Like that was always been my thing in life. Just do something that's like technically not, you know, and as long as no one bothers you about it, then, and if they do bother about it, then maybe it's like, okay, I'll turn it off, or like, okay, maybe I'll get my lawyer. But just do stuff. Like, people are so afraid of just like doing shit. Like, people are so busy with their own lives and worried about their own life. It's like, they don't give a shit if you're doing this weird thing over here. Maybe at a certain point they'll start bugging you, but I don't know. I always say if I get thrown in jail, like, that's just better PR for Nasser anyway. So
yeah, like, I hope you don't have to like, you know, like, ideally that'd be nice for you not to end up in jail, but it would, you know, certainly add to your street cred.
Well, I'm just like, I'm going to Hong Kong. My whole team's like, no, you can't go to Hong Kong. You're going to be like captured. I'm like, I don't know. Well, I'd be kind of, again, it'd be good for our app. Like,
are you guys still banned in China on the App Store?
Mainland China.
Mainland. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's one of our most downloaded regions, like, to this day, for that first day, which is crazy. Like, we had more downloads in China that one day than we've like our total downloads like for its entire history. So it makes Seriously. Sense that China was like freaked out, right? I think that's my theory, is that it sent off some internal flag within their system that's like, why is this getting so many downloads?
Dang.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like a month later, they banned all of the Bootstrap relays in the app. So like, they had a guy in the CCP, the cyber division, like looking into Noster and blocking stuff. So that's crazy. Those were crazy times.
It's wild. Like, it wasn't that long. Like, it feels like a long time ago, but like, it wasn't that long ago, you know? Like,
right.
I remember all this going down and just being like, damn, that's
like, feels like ancient history now. Oh my God. It was like 2 or 3 years ago.
I know. It's crazy how time moves differently in the Noster world. I'm still saying Noster, by the way. I'm not, you know, you're not going to break me of that habit. Like, it's, I'll die on this hill.
Yeah. Noster, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever works.
Either way. Well, so like, okay. So what do you think as far as like, I mean, I've seen like people talk about the growth on Noster kind of like, you know, stagnating a little bit, like not seeing as many inflows. I think we've also historically seen larger inflows around mass censorship events. Like that's been a, you know, it's people running away from something versus like running towards something. It's like they're looking for any option. Do you think that continues to be the case, that those are just always going to be the biggest drivers? Or do you think like we have a ton of really cool, you know, micro apps and social media clients and all other things and tools for creators, like that's going to have people just running towards it? Cause like, oh, look, it's a better option. Or is there some blend of that where like, yeah, it's a little bit of both, and it's just a really kind of slow and steady grind because we've never had an open protocol for communication like this before?
I think it's going to be a combination of a slow process, but also like spikiness, like spikes of certain things getting built on it. So one example was BitChat that Jack's working on. And he's going to add like NIP 17, you know, DMs, a way of like sending DMs via BitChat or like, so if your friend's not nearby, you can still use Noster as like a way to like, to get the message out, even if they're not nearby. So things like that, like if you get these apps that just go viral every now and then, it's not like a traditional startup where it's like it goes viral and then maybe it dies and then everyone forgets about it. It's like if it goes viral, it's like everyone, the whole network kind of grows and gets kind of a burst of energy. So it's a little bit different than just a typical startup. So maybe that's what's going to happen. But maybe, yeah, it could just be like this forever. Who knows? Like for me, it's like I'm happy. Like I'm happy. I spend most of my time on Noster. I don't know. Yeah, it's hard. Like, I think the biggest issue that we're having at Domus right now is, I mean, the number one feedback we get is that people can't find their crowd, right? That there's like, oh, it's just a bunch of Bitcoiners. So building like community tools is like, has been like kind of the big focus past year among like a lot of the developers on Noster, even Jack's team, the other stuff with Chorus. You know, there's Flotilla by Hodlbod. We got Chad or whatever. Wow, sorry.
Yeah.
But there's so, yes, more solutions like that could help, but it's one of those things that it's, who knows how history is. My biggest frustration is like, I tend to not get too upset over things that I don't have any control over. I mean, I do have some control over like making my app more popular and more and usable and get more people in, but it kind of feels like it's out of my hands. I feel like it's just gonna be some world event that's gonna bring a lot of people in. I'm just trying to make sure like I have the best app experience possible, just so people stick every time they come over. But that's all I can really do, and that's all I really focus on.
I know you guys recently you implemented the follow packs, which I think is like a big you know, a big thing. And I'm not sure, like, I don't know how it worked in the back end, but do you pull that from what Callie built, or did you guys just build your own version of that, or how did that work?
No, this is the beautiful thing about Nostr, right? So, and this is what I'm talking about, these apps that can go viral. Like, in some sense, it went viral on Nostr, whatever that level of activity means on Nostr. But everyone immediately recognized that that's a good idea that we need. You know, like, it helps onboarding and all these things. So that website was just generating that data. And then my app could just see that data on the network, and then I can just implement a UI for that data. So this is the power of Nostr, where viral apps can generate new forms of data. Other apps can consume that form of data. And that is the thing that makes Nostr so different from other web apps. Because web apps, it's not like you build a web app and you generate data and then other web apps start using your data. It's like, not really. Like, they're pretty isolated, the websites. Whereas Nostr is like, no, like, we actually have apps that can interoperate. And this is where that is the true power of Nostr. And like, that's why I think why we're building all this other stuff. And this is what's going to hopefully get people excited. But maybe it's too technical, maybe it's too nerdy. I know a lot of the devs like that idea. It's just we need to see it play out a bit more.
Well, I mean, I think it's, for folks that aren't familiar, it's following.space is what Callie built out. And I created a podcaster pack on there naturally, you know, just trying to stay in my lane. But like, I think you're exactly right, that interoperability piece and that ability to leverage what other people build. I mean, that's the beauty of open source, right? Is that you have the ability to come, like, yes, yeah, somebody else built something. Oh, great. You can use what they built. But even over and above that on Nostr, it's like, oh, it's not just you can like use the code that they built. Like, you can use the data that they're generating and just pull that in and surface it in your app and make your app better and create. Now it's like, you know, I've seen multiple Nostr clients that have implemented follow packs. And so it's like, wow, that's great. Like more, you know, more of that. And I think that's like, that's such a strength. You don't have that in the siloed, you know, world that we operate in today. Like, that's a feature of Nostr.
And there's a reason, right? Like, the web was not designed, like, the things they were protocolizing was simply ways to like talk to a server. Like, that's what their focus was like, I have some documents on a server and I'm just going to pull it down from that specific server. The genius about Nostr is that it made the data model and it made the database model into the protocol. So like, there's another example of that is like Bitcoin, I guess, is another example of this, where it's like the data model is a part of the protocol, like transactions, the ledger, the database. And that's what gives it its insane like power and the fact that it can replicate across the entire planet. So Nostr is just doing that for application data. So instead of like monetary ledger data, it's doing it for like any type of data your application might want to generate. It's not perfect. Like, we don't have like perfect, like peer-to-peer global replicatability of like you have in Bitcoin, but we don't really, I think that would actually be an anti-feature, because I don't want your dick pics spam, like getting onto my client for, like, if I don't want to see that, right? So having this isolated, still connected, but isolated in different patches, like, that's a really cool way to design a protocol, I think.
It's so funny because, you know, so many of the shitcoin scammers, it's like, you know, what if we put social media on the blockchain? And it's like, you don't, like you just don't need to. That's just a stupid thing. You're just trying to raise like VC money to then go dump your token as soon as, you know, you've got retail hooked and just gut them. But it's like, you don't want that. You don't need a global state for that is, you know, replicated across every single, you know, node in the network. Like, it's just not necessary. Like, but, you know, shitcoin scammer is going to shitcoin scam.
Yeah, I feel like the whole, like, blockchain, not Bitcoin thing just, like, dropped collective IQ points of, like, a large portion of the population for a good decade. I'm hopefully recovering.
Still in recovery.
I don't know if that's still a thing, and people still have conferences on blockchains, but it's just like, they do. It's not a good database. It's not a good database.
Like, you just should have a centralized database for, like, pretty much all of this stuff. Like, Bitcoin is the only viable use case of blockchain that, and maybe some, like, I'm, you know, I'm not a goddamn fortune teller. I'm a podcaster. Like, I don't know anything. But, like, it's the only, like, true legitimate use that we've seen for blockchain at this time. I think that's very fair to say. And, like, are there some other things that might be interesting? Yeah, but, like, is that actually the best way to do it? You know, like, for money, for, like, a decentralized, censorship-resistant, absolutely scarce money that can operate with rough consensus, yeah, blockchain makes sense. For pretty much everything else, it's like, nah, you just should probably just have a centralized database, or you should have distributed relays, or, you know, whatever, like, in the Nostr sense. Like, I don't know if you... I'm probably missing some very important use cases of blockchain now, you know, that... But I don't know. I'm assuming you're on the same page there.
Yeah, I mean, like, so I'm glad we're, like, this reminds me of the conversations I had in, like, 2017. And, like, it's bringing me back. And, like, and I think it's important to restate it, like, exactly, you know, like, why blockchain only makes sense in the context of Bitcoin. Because you need very specific set of things that work together. Like, you know, you have the proof of work, you have, like, the ledger aspect, you have, like, the fact that it's money. And it's like you have this one particular use case, and all of the things that support that data structure are toward that one goal of making a simple ledger that is money. And you can't just take those pieces and like make a general purpose database that's good. And this was like always something I tried to say like back in the day, and like 10 years, I think it was 10 years ago now. Oh my god! Like, what it was all the blockchain, not Bitcoin stands. Like, it doesn't. This just logically does not make sense because it just the pieces don't. It's kind of like what's that one? That's that one term where it's like a bunch of like tribal people. They were like they saw airplanes land on their island, and then they tried to like build their own airplanes out of like wooden sticks.
Oh,
and they're like what's the
not cargo cult? What's the
yeah?
It's God, the, well, I'm just gonna oh, it's gonna bug me.
I know that's like I'm gonna anyway. So people know what we're talking about, but like I always look back at that because that's what the blockchain people are doing is that they just like they're taking an existing technology that has a very specific purpose and just like trying to build a fucking thing that's just going to fall apart. It just doesn't make sense in any other context. So, yeah, I mean, and then, so, but then when I look at Nostr, it's like hyper optimized database. It's, I think we have probably the fastest database on the planet. I always say that I'm like non hyperbolically. The guy who made StirFry is like an absolute like genius at database architecture. And when, after reading that code base, it literally inspired me to build the database from scratch because I just thought it was the coolest piece of software I ever saw in my life. And just like I've never seen something so hyper optimized before. And I think the reason he could actually do that is because Nostr's scope and it's like and its structure is so simple that when you have and whereas like a traditional database like SQL, oh no, we're getting into databases, this is really exciting for people, but a
I like it, let's go.
Traditional database like SQL, you have like very complex query language, right? You have like support all these different indexes and like ways to aggregate stuff and ways to like filter data, and so it's very powerful, but that power basically restricts the amount of like optimizations you can do on the database, like in general, like generalized optimizations. So that's why a lot of people in SQL, you have to like create these special indexes to make it high performance. If you don't have the indexes, it'll fail. But like since Nostr is a very specific form, it's a very specific structure, he was able to build like this like super optimal database that just like basically returns things in O1 time. It's like instantly, effectively instantly. So I always say Nostr, that's why it works. Like if that software didn't exist, like Nostr wouldn't work. And that gives me a lot of hope that it can actually scale up to, cause we don't even really need that level of performance. Like in the future, hopefully eventually more people are running their own nodes and like, you know, it's much more distributed, but like it's surprising we can handle so much load on a single server already. So anyway, I don't know what that rant was. It was a database rant, but
no, I mean, I think like to the large part, it's like, it's amazing how well this all works. Right.
Yeah.
Like, and sure, you know, it's not, it has some rough edges, right? It's not, you know, it's not completely perfect. Like, because you've also got a bunch of like people building independently and then having all of this stuff kind of come together and work together and they're interfacing with, you know, with other apps. And like, so of course there are going to be some rough edges. Of course it's going to be a little bit messy, but like overall, like the fact that I'm able to have a really positive streaming experience on zap.stream and broadcast that, and any Nostr client that wants to can go ahead and pick up that stream and surface it in their own application. Like, or you can, you know, just, you know, have a link to zap.stream. You can do that, but like, you know, you can just do that. You can have it and it just works. Like, you don't have to go to YouTube to watch a YouTube stream, you know, like, and granted with, how streaming works. Obviously, you can stream to multiple places, but the point here is this is I'm streaming it to one place, and that is getting picked up by all these different clients. And like that's just cool. Like that's a good experience. And I think that, like, yes, back to our earlier conversation about like, okay, we're going to keep having these waves of people running away from totalitarian regimes and censorship, you know, censorship attacks and everything. But also, like, I hope that more people start to come around to the fact that there are actually just better experiences to be had on Nostr, thanks to how this interoperable network of clients and relays works. Like, that is really a powerful thing. And, you know, that's going to, you know, again, I think it's harder to get people to run towards something than it is to get them to run away from something. Like when there's like a clear and present danger, you're like, okay, I need to get away from that. Whatever I hit, you know, whatever I run into, that's fine. But like, if things are kind of okay, if you haven't been, you know, if you haven't been censored, like, you know, okay, you know, I'm not really too worried. And it's just, it's going to take you time. I mean, it's like with Bitcoin, like people who live in countries where their currencies have hyperinflated grok Bitcoin a lot quicker. People who live in, you know, in the United States, like they takes them a little bit longer. Granted, we have a ton of Bitcoin ownership in the US, but it's still like, I think the number, Cornell just put out a study in like the number one reason for people in the US not owning Bitcoin is they're just not interested. And it's like the highest of any, like of any of the countries they surveyed, the US is the highest. So it's like people just, you know, it's like, why don't you use Nostr? Like for most people, they're just not interested. But like there are more and more compelling use cases for why you could be interested, like especially as a content creator. And that's like the drum I will keep beating. It's like, if you're a content creator, you should be using Nostr. Like it, if nothing, like I don't view it as a backup. I view it as like, this is a primary part. Like everything else is kind of a backup. Like this, I think, is what has the staying power. But like, if you need to think of it as a backup at first to get you on here and get you to start using it, do that and at least check it out.
You said something that reminded me of, you know, we're talking about how, you know, we, at least at the very start, we're talking about how like, yeah, we're winning, but like not really. Cause I was looking at, I feel like recently in the news, people have been talking a lot more about like stable coins and especially in like the Southern America and stuff. Like that's all they talk about. It's like stable coins. And yeah, I think even recently I saw Trump was saying something like they're not going to buy Bitcoin anymore. I think I saw that this morning. I don't know if that was true.
I mean, without giving it too much air, Scott Bessent basically was on the news and said like, you know, said positive things like Bitcoin is a store of value for the 21st century. And, you know, we're not going to sell any of our Bitcoin that we've confiscated. And if we confiscate more, we're also going to hold on to that. But we're like not going to buy any, or we're not going to buy any of that was his expression. I think he was probably talking off the cuff. And I may have tweeted and noted some, you know, incendiary things in all caps to, because I would like to troll a little bit. But like, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, I think people need to remember that like Bitcoin doesn't need the US government, but the US government does need Bitcoin.
That's true.
They'll realize that sooner or later. I don't really care if they start buying it. I would hope if all countries are eventually going to print their fiat and buy it, I would hope the US would be the first. But like, you know, we'll see what our glorious leaders have to say about that. At the end of the day, like I'm okay with sats still being cheap as possible for people, for the average person, for as long as possible. But I digress.
Yeah, it's just interesting because like, you know, even with the great success of, you know, the price movement, I guess price movement is a success. That's one way of valuing or seeing the six. I mean, I look at Bitcoin as a technology and I'm like, I think it's already a success. I don't care what the price is. But obviously, you know, price is also a really good indicator of like measuring how much other people believe it's also a success. Yeah. But I'm still like, I hear these stories about people like how there's like mainly focused on the, like I've always been, my number one focus has always been like, how do you get people to use Bitcoin? Like, I think that was one of the big reasons why I made the Zaps protocol. And I just wanted people to experience what it is to have to feel like true freedom. But I sometimes look at all these other incumbents that are just trying to like take over the payments, like the digital payments aspect. And I always wanted Bitcoin to be that thing, but I don't know. It seems like stablecoins are for some reason taking off and I don't know why that is. Is it just like government? Is just like there's more startups working on that? I don't know. There's like a lot more money there. Like it's just, it seems very, I don't know. I feel like sometimes I'm just so out of touch with like what everyone else is doing. I'm just like working on Bitcoin technology and like building stuff in like Nostr and Zaps. But, and I look at the rest of the world and like, wait, everyone's not interested in Bitcoin for payments. They're using Tether. I'm like, I don't know. It's kind of frustrating sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I think like from the stablecoin perspective, it's like, the US dollar has a greater network effect than Bitcoin does at this point, right? Like that's undeniable. Like people like all around the world want US dollars more so than people want Bitcoin. And like we can argue that like that's foolish and they shouldn't want dollars. Dollars are just a shit coin, but like, it's just the reality. Like and it's going to eventually, you know, it slowly changes. But like, so I think that viewing it through that lens, it's like, it's natural that people, especially in developing, you know, countries where they have even worse fiats than we do here in the US or than the moose knuckle currency you have up in Canada, like, of course they are going to want dollars. And if there's a way for them to have digital dollars that they can send around on their phone, then yeah, they're going to want that. And like a lot of them also want Bitcoin, but like dollars still have a greater network effect. So I think it's just like,
and it's a technology to get more dollar, to get more fiat, basically.
Yeah. And well, I mean, obviously there's a ton of money to be made on the stablecoin issuance side, you know, like Tether's like the most profitable company, like in the history of the world, like in a like on a per headcount basis, like it's nuts. And like, okay, that's something that's like, it is obviously useful to people around the world because people are using it like around the world, you know, like whether or not that's, obviously, that's also a tool of U.S. dollar dominance. I think that the U.S. government's realizing that now. You know, whether or not that's a good or a bad thing, you know, let's see. But like, we can't deny that at least like you know, Tether is providing something that people want and people need and is useful to them. And like, I think that people are going to come around to Bitcoin, just like people are going to come around to Nostr. But like, it takes time. Like these entrenched systems are just that. They are entrenched. Like they have the stronger network effects at this time. If I
was trying to steel man like positive things about that and from that perspective, I could, you maybe make the point, like maybe it familiarizes people more with the technology and more with like interacting with keys. And maybe that's the stage we're at, is like, we just got to get more people like used to using this technology versus just like right now they're just used to their credit card and like their bank's, you know, PIN numbers and stuff. So it's just going to take a large mental shift. And maybe that's the same with Nostr. It's like, you know, holding your key is still very hard for people. Like I still get emails, like tens of emails every day of just people like, can't log into Domus. Like I can't post anything. I'm like, and then they're all logged in with their MPUB. I think that actually might be a bug. I'm like, maybe there's a bug. Cause like, I think when it restores from backup, it like uses the MPUB instead of NSEC. I'm like, okay, that's probably my fault, but still.
why do these people keep complaining?
Like, just get smarter. I'm like, oh wait, that's actually a bug.
Well, this is an interesting thing where technology and user experience can help to drive behavior. Like I love what Samson and his team at Aqua Wallet are doing for this reason. I'm to clarify, I'm in no way sponsored by them or anything. I just like what they're building. I like the wallet. It's one of the, you know, many Lightning wallets I use.
Me and Celine started that wallet.
Did you?
At Blockstream. Yeah. So me and Celine's idea was Aqua Wallet.
No way. Well, look at that. Wow. Okay. So I was sitting back, just taking this compliment. You're like, yeah,
I'm like, oh, well, you know, we worked hard. I didn't do a lot of the programming, awesome. But it was more of just like, I always wanted a single sig wallet. I was hired by Blockstream to like work on a Bitcoin backend to the green wallet. And like, I always thought the multi-sig wallet was kind of complicated. So I'm like, what if we just have like a single sig wallet that just talks to the Bitcoin core node? And then somehow that evolved into like Aqua. And then, so yeah, I know.
Dude, that's awesome.
Now people know that.
No, this is a cool bit of lore, but like, it's nice because I also like, if people are going to use stable coins like Tether, personally, I think it's best if they do that on like the Liquid network versus like Ethereum or Tron. Cause I'm a toxic Bitcoin maximalist. But that experience is really nice within Aqua, where you have that capability to swap back and forth between Bitcoin and Tether and, you know, layer one Bitcoin. And they just generally call it layer two Bitcoin. I know they're doing some kind of fancy stuff on the back. Like the Lightning payment takes like a little bit longer cause it's like an atomic swap or something that's going on. Right. But that's a nice experience. Like you can use that as your, you know, USDT stablecoin wallet, but then you have a very easy way to be able to swap into Bitcoin. And like, even like I've literally heard Paolo, you know, the CEO of Tether, be like, yeah, Tether's a shitcoin. Everything that's not Bitcoin is a shitcoin. Like Tether's a US dollar stablecoin. Of course it's a shitcoin. Like, you know, like they're pretty hard, like from the people I know over there, at least they're pretty hardcore Bitcoiners. So yeah, I don't know. It's like, it's one of those things where I think it's a useful tool. I use stable coins like occasionally, not a ton, but like I do occasionally. And when I do it on Liquid, but yeah, I don't know. I'm glad these things exist. There are obviously some very worrisome, like down the road, like, I don't know. We're going to see basically every major bank, I think, is going to have their own like little stable coin. Like, you know, old JP Morgan is just going to be champing at the bit to get their own little JPM coin out there.
Yeah, it seems much more likely that you would see a lot of stablecoin integration into banks versus like have a Bitcoin like transaction, like a Lightning transaction. I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe that's, it's kind of sad, but it's just maybe Bitcoin and Lightning will always just be that freedom technology that's just like the Wild West on the side, and people who like really care about the stuff will have access to it. Maybe Nostra would be the same. I don't know. Yeah, some people just don't like to, you know, have that responsibility. They want like someone else to handle that for them, and maybe that's just a universal thing that will never change. And maybe that's just why, you know, there'll always be people in power who can have control, because there's always gonna be people who just want to be, you know, they don't want to have any responsibility. Maybe that's just, I don't know, maybe that's just always going to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, like, human nature remains relatively consistent, you know, in a lot of ways. And like, also breakdowns of people within society like remain pretty consistent, despite the changes that technology brings. It's like, you know, people are still people at the end of the day. I don't know. I mean, I'm on the in terms of like, okay, do Bitcoin and Lightning and Nostra stays like these fringe things. I mean, I you probably saw this, but like back in, I think it was February, it was at Plan B El Salvador. They announced that they're going to have Tether on Lightning. So like that, you know, that's another thing where it's like, okay, you know, that's kind of that argument for like, I mean, not only like, yeah, Bitcoin's money, but like the layers on top of Bitcoin can also be used as rails for, you know, these fiat payments. And like, again, you can like debate whether or not people should like, yeah, fiat's a shitcoin, but it's like, but people still want to use it. Like, you know what I mean? So like at this point, the market still wants to use it. So like, you know, we can debate whether that's good or bad, but it's like, it's just the reality of it. Like, yeah. And, you know, if people are doing it like on Lightning or on Liquid, things that are like Bitcoin adjacent, I think that's better ultimately. I'd rather see that than, again, like on Ethereum or Tron or wherever else. But yeah, I mean, we'll see. It's an interesting time. It's an interesting time.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. I'm always like to look at it from a computer nerd perspective. Maybe the correct analogy as a computer nerd would be like, it's always just going to be the Linux, you know, operating system. And yeah, there's going to be variations. There's going to be the Mac OS that's, you know, built on, you know, similar ideas, but, and it's going to be a little bit more locked down, a little bit more restricted. But at the end of the day, the thing that's going to be the under everything is Bitcoin. And that's going to be the interoperability layer, even if it's not always exposed to the user. And that's still okay. I think that as long as that freedom there, you can always drop down to a level where you can be free. That is so important, because if we didn't have that, then that would be a scary future. Yeah. So always we have the option to drop down to that level is pretty important.
I couldn't agree more. Like, you need that optionality. Like, you need that opt out. And like, even if you still want to exist in the kind of more fiat world, like the fact that you have a way to get out of there when you need to is really important. I'm curious too, like, just so obviously, you know, you spend your time working on Damas, on NoteDeck, on these like and this kind of ecosystem that you're building there. Are there other things, you touched on a couple of them earlier, but there are other things that you see happening on Nostra, either on like the social media side or elsewhere, that you're just really like excited about, or that you see as like, ooh, I'd like to, you know, incorporate, you know, X, Y, and Z into what we're doing here at Damas. Like, that's a really neat tool or neat, you know, feature set, whatever it might be.
Yeah. I mean, I never thought it would be cool, but like the whole BitChat thing, I'm not just trying to toot Jack's horn or anything, but I actually got to use it at the Portland. And at the time we had the largest BitChat group. And I actually had a lot of fun. I saw a lot of cool use cases where, you know, I was in the audience, and like American HODL was up there, and everyone in the audience was like on BitChat, and they were like chirping them and stuff, and like having a little peanut gallery.
That's awesome.
I just thought it was hilarious. And I was like, I sent that photo and he was like, oh, that's funny. But like things like festivals. And so this idea, so that gave me the idea of what happens if we're in this world where if you're just walking down the street, and let's say you have an interest of like, I'm buying Bitcoin, and then someone has another interest that they're selling Bitcoin, and then two BitChat nodes they just detect each other and they detect that those are, there's a trade that's could be possible. It just pops up on your phone that says this guy wants to sell Bitcoin. And you, and so like, there's, I think there's a lot of cool, like peer to peer market, like buying and selling things that could happen over like these peer to peer protocols. So that's why I've been having a lot of fun, like adding more peer to peer stuff within NoteDeck and within, the Domus Android stack. So being able to like communicate over BitChat is something like I'm looking at right now as like a potential peer to peer transport layer for Noster. So there's like, and we already have like a, if you're on a Wi-Fi network with other Domus nodes, you can actually just send notes and it'll like, it'll get them peer to peer. So there's a lot of fun things like around there, I think are really interesting. But outside of that, yeah, the community aspects, the community apps, those are going to be huge. I want to get Reddit. I want Reddit on top of Noster because I think Reddit's a shithole of censorship and that's the next thing to be cleaned up, I think. So things like that, hopefully we can start building those soon.
Nice. That's super cool. Like the idea of like having kind of that localized ability to do like a peer to peer Bitcoin transaction from like a buying and selling perspective. Obviously like you can do a Bitcoin transaction anytime you want, but like I have somebody like that I want to anonymously buy Bitcoin from using, I mean, I don't know, I guess probably using Tether, I guess, unless you want to meet that person physically, like you're, you know, that's an interesting question there, but I think that's really neat. And I think the more of these like tools that we start actually like using, like the largest BitChat I've had also is two people. It's just been me and Carla in the house. Nice. Our son's not using BitChat yet. He's a little young.
Gotta get him on that.
Yeah, I know. He's really been slack on his freedom tech. But like this stuff is really, it's really cool to see. It's really cool to see the, like what's possible. Because like these technologies that we have in these like phones, these are supercomputers. Like calling them phones is just still feels like funny. Like that's the thing people do on them the least. And yet we still call them phones. But like, there's kind of so shame, much that can be done.
And it's kind of shame. Like it's literally has a very powerful radio and it's actually really locked down. You can only use it for like talking to cell towers for the most part. But if we had the ability to just like go peer to peer on our phones to other nodes, like to other phones, like that would be hugely empowering. And maybe that's why they don't want us to have that technology, or maybe it just like interferes with the bands too much or something. I don't know. But I always say like a conversation at a bar is the most decentralized thing you can do. It's like completely peer to peer. It doesn't require any centralized architecture, infrastructure, no cloud involved. You're just having a beer with someone. So I think what we're doing, what peer to peer technology is simply restoring that human thing we've been doing for hundreds of thousands of years. So I think it's worthwhile.
Having a beer or a nice glass of Peony Lane wine, who did send me this wine to drink on the show. And shout out to Ben Justman for being a huge Noster bull. And also the wine is really great and it's all organic, guys. And he's literally paying me in the wine that I'm drinking to say this. So I just want to be clear there.
And he has really interesting wine threads on Noster. I've learned a lot about wine and I've zapped. Those are kind of like the highest zap things. I'm just like, it's really interesting content. So you should definitely follow him.
It's fascinating stuff. And like, I love the story too, where it's like, you know, he's moved, you know, basically like moved back in the land that, you know, his dad was kind of, you know, basically, like, you know, working on and developing and like, you know, just decided like, I'm just going to make wine. And I think he said over half of his sales are in Bitcoin too, which is like crazy. That's awesome. Like that's really huge. Like, and it just goes to show you that like there are a lot of Bitcoiners who want to spend Bitcoin. I mean, you see this on Noster every day. What is a Zap? A Zap is spending Bitcoin, right? Like that's what you were doing. And like, you know, if you just want to, you know, hold your Bitcoin, hodl your Bitcoin, hodl your Bitcoin, however you'd like to say it, and not ever spend any of it, like that's fine too. I don't care what you do with your money, but like, shout out to the people who are out there spending Bitcoin. I try to do it every chance I get. I mean, I do it on Noster every day, but I try to do it for goods and services as well when I can, because it's like, I think that Bitcoin needs to be a medium of exchange and be used as medium of exchange to like reach that full potential of what it can do. But like, you know, the great thing is like Bitcoin doesn't care if you do or do not use it in that way. And as long as some people do, it'll be all right. You send some fat zaps out there, Will. So you're doing your part, you know?
I try. I don't know. I feel like the zapping has definitely died down a lot, and that's fine. Obviously, like, the price has increased, and people, you know, are busy doing other things. But you know, it is a very, I think it's a rare experience. A lot of people don't get to experience very often, but when I was at the Portland conference, and I haven't used Lightning in a physical place in a long time. And I was like, wait, I use the new Domus zapping feature, or like the paying invoice feature. So I was getting zaps from people sending me zaps on the network, and I was like, I bought a Bitcoin pin. And I'm like, that's such a cool feeling that you can just like get paid in Freedom units and then just like use it to buy something like in real life. And my main goal in life is just to get more people to experience that, because there's nothing more like fuck yeah freedom than that, right?
it is pretty cool. And like, again, I wonder how much Bitcoin NGU technology will actually end up driving people to Nostr. Like, I feel like when you first brought created Zaps, I feel like there was like so much buzz about them, and like people were just like super stoked. But like the price was like pretty, I mean, that was like the price was pretty low at that. We were like depths of the bear market at that point. And people were just sending, like, just
15,000, I think, or something.
Yeah, price. It was literally like, I think you released it like at the bottom of the bear.
But I think Ralph sent like a 20 million sat zap. Like,
that's like nuts.
He was going crazy.
I remember when Jack was out there, like, just like he picked like a list of people that I felt privileged enough to be on who were like active Nostr, either users or developers or whatever, and just like sent like a million sats to each person. I was like, that's like really cool. And also like, wow, like testing, you know, fat channels as well. Like that's a neat thing to do.
I do it occasionally just to test my liquidity. I'll drop like 100K just to make sure my node's still operating.
Are you dropping into one of your NIMs though? You're just zap washing yourself.
I think the last one was like to Isabella Art, that person. I don't know. I just did a cool post. I'm like, I don't know. It's nice to just drop some fat sats every now and then. Like, just like, I feel like, I don't know. It's like going to the strip club. Just like throw some cash and everyone's having a good time.
I've kept my zap, my default zap at 696, just forever. And if it's a really, really banger post or somebody really brought a lot of value, I'll do a, you know, 6969. And like, I looked at my, you know, zap sent versus received on, I forget where I checked this out, but it was like, you know, I've sent like, you know, millions more sats than I've received. Like I'm not making money on Nostr, but that's not my goal. I'm not like hoarding these sats that I'm receiving on Nostr and like trying to skimp out, you know, how many I send. It's like, no, I want people, like, nothing feels better than getting a really big zap because you know that somebody like actually valued what you put out there, and they're, you know, they valued it because they just sent you the hardest money that will ever exist. And like, I remember what I was getting to. I feel like as Bitcoin price goes up, like, and people start hearing like, hey, there's this like social media protocol where people will like send you Bitcoin when you, you know, I don't know, post foot pics, or we got to bring Footster back too. When you post foot pics, or you, you know, like, you know, have a really like hot take, or, you know, whatever, you post a beautiful piece of art or a picture of your, you know, family out of, you know, out in the woods. Like that's a pretty incredible thing. And I feel like still the, you know, majority of the world is sleeping on Bitcoin, and the people that are even aware of Bitcoin, many of them are sleeping on Nostr. And so I feel like it's only a matter of time, but I think we need to start re-stressing, like, hey, you can make money by shit posting. Like we need to get back to that narrative a little bit, or by foot posting, either way. Derek Ross will be so happy.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I think it's just, maybe there's just the fact that it's not a tangible asset, in the sense that, you know, if you have a kilo of gold in your hand, you're like, damn, this is pretty baller. And like, well, that's what, isn't like Bitcoin, like roughly like that, about a kilo of gold. So I always say like zapping is like sending chunks of gold or gold dust over the internet. And if people just saw gold coming out of their computer, they'd be like, holy shit, this is cool. But maybe it's not as like impactful if it's just bits. I don't know.
No, Bitcoin is more than a kilo of gold. Now, I just had to check. A kilo of gold is like 107,000 U.S. petrodollar cuckbucks. Bitcoin is, one Bitcoin is more than a kilogram of gold, which is pretty wild.
The fact you can teleport gold over the internet, like not even gold, but better gold, like gold that's like the technology that's like 100 times better than gold.
It is nuts. It is literally magic internet money. Like that's
why wouldn't you want to play game with that technology? Just like the coolest thing ever, teleporting like real value.
It's pretty incredible. And I feel like I I've been saying this a lot lately, but just been thinking about this and just, I feel so fortunate to be alive at this place in space and time. Like how lucky are we that we get to be around for literally the dawn of the Bitcoin age? Like it's going to get messy in the short term, but like long term, I am super bullish on humanity because of what Bitcoin allows. And like, that's just that's a really cool thing.
Well, I always say, like, just imagine if you were the first person to discover the properties of gold and like, and no one else could like, well, it's just like this malleable metal. That's like, why would you want to use that? It's kind of like useless. And then, it's a very fortunate time. Everyone who is like not partaking or at least like looking into it or at least learning about it, you're doing yourself a huge disservice because it's like the best, this is the most unique time. Like, think of like at cosmological scales, like what's the Earth, like 4.7 billion years or something. And like, we're at this one moment in time where we create this technology that is perfect scarcity, mathematical scarcity based off the laws of physics. And you're here at this point in time. It's like, and you think it's a scam. Like, can you talk about the biggest fumble of your like entire existence? Like, I can't think of anything more important to be doing other than building on Bitcoin. It's nothing else seems as important. Maybe I would have appreciated a bit more if I was born in a time where there was immortality, but even like that would be the only thing that would be better than this. Is like the best time I can think of, because every point before this point is like people are having a bad time. It's not really a bad time right now. So
no, and honestly, I go back and forth on the whole immortality thing. Cause like, it always sounds good, but you know, if I know anything from science fiction or from fantasy, it's like there is a dark side to living forever. You know. Especially if everybody else around you dies. But I digress. Mm. No, it is wild to me that still so many people are absolutely asleep at the wheel. And I get it from the perspective of like, you're dealing with, like, you're trying to provide for your family. You're trying to keep your head above water because like the system is just, you know, bleeding you dry. And like that's kind of the sad thing, is that so many people are so wrapped up in the current system because they are stuck on that hamster wheel that they can't dedicate the time to looking at the one thing that would actually save them from that. Like there's a really dark kind of like a really depressing irony there. Is like,
well, you kind of get stuck. Like, it's like, how do you get out of that? Cause you're basically just doing, you're spending your whole paycheck just to like, so you can like pay rent. So you're trying to like scrounge a little bit of money and be super disciplined just to put a little bit away. So I feel like if I was in that state, I would just like, what my number one goal would be was like try to start a Bitcoin business and just try to get as much people sending me Bitcoin as possible. Cause it's going to be hard to just try to make fiat and then, buy Bitcoin. I don't know. I feel like the better way to get lots of Bitcoin if you had none, is just try to start a Bitcoin business. But I don't know. I can't think of any other better ways really.
Well, and it's cool too, because we're at this point where because we're still very much in the innovator phase. Like I don't even think we're at the early adopter phase yet. Like if you look like actually from like a technology, the S curve perspective, like I don't think we've actually reached that, that early adopter phase yet. But because of that, we've got a bunch of super hardcore people who like, again, not everybody wants to spend their Bitcoin. Some people don't, you know, ever want to spend a single sat, but like for those of us that do, like we will support businesses that accept Bitcoin. And especially if you embody that ethos, and like, that's the great thing about Nostr right now, is like, you can just start a business on Nostr providing a valuable product or service, and people will be very happy to pay you in Bitcoin for doing that. And maybe just send you random zaps along the way for your thoughts about building this, you know, this Bitcoin business. Like Ben Justman is a great example of that with Peony Lane Wine. I'm giving you as many shout outs as possible for this because I'm enjoying the heck out of this wine. But like that's an awesome thing that you can do that. Like you can just go start providing value for people, charge Bitcoin. And like if what you're providing is valuable and people want it, like they will pay you in Bitcoin for it.
And the market isn't just like, and the market isn't just like your local currency or the currency of, you know, the country you're in. It's the entire planet. So that's a much wider market than, because I remember I was going to a lot of these HRF events, and that was they're saying people who are in Africa, and that was kind of their biggest struggle, is just trying to get to like sell their products to the wider market. And it's like, it's really hard to get it out there. But on Bitcoin, they can just put it on, let's say, Nostr, and start selling their product to anyone in the world without having to try to go through all these like resellers like Amazon and And apparently it's just a lot harder to go through. I don't know. But yeah, there's a lot of opportunities. And I think that we're going to get better and better marketplaces and storefronts on Oster. Like something I've been thinking about a lot as well. We're starting to see more of that. So yeah, it's going to get easier and easier to start a business on Oster and to start selling stuff. So it's exciting times.
I think that's like another thing where it's like, if you're a Oster only business, which I think some of these folks are, like, you know, if you want to get them, like, you have to go to Oster to find them. But like that sort of Oster only product for, and also like Oster only services, and that including like content creation. Like, I love what American Hoddle is doing right now with his, you know, Oster only vlogs. Like, cause he's a guy who has everybody listens when he talks. Right. And, because he's very enjoyable to listen to, and he always drops very profound things in his very special way. But like, he could be, you know, going on X and, you know, doing, you know, live streams on there and vlogs on there and posting these things to YouTube or where, you know, wherever else. But he's not, he's making a conscious choice to say, I'm just going to do this for Oster only. And I think that's like really cool. It's why I do these live streams just on Oster. And like, yeah, I publish them everywhere else after the fact. I'm not quite as cool as American Hoddle, but like, I think that kind of like creators or, well, especially creators creating experiences that can only be had on Oster, I think is a really great way to bring more and more people over. Cause it's like, if you like, that's a powerful thing. People, audiences follow people, right? And if you can only get a certain type of content on this decentralized censorship resistant platform that also happens to have a really nice user experience for you and multiple choices and options, like, that's a great thing. So I encourage creators like to do more of that. If you can think of a way, and you certainly can.
And I always see that as a sign of someone with great integrity and someone who's like willing to sacrifice maybe a little bit, a bit of their, you know, cause it's an opportunity cost thing. They could be spending time like getting onto the bigger platforms or promoting their content, but they believe in something that's like important. It's bigger than just making money. But these are the types of people that are going to make Oster successful, because the only thing that's going to draw people to Oster is like unique content. If it's just getting cross posted to other platforms, and like, well, they don't need to leave their platform. So if they see like, wait, there's just so much stuff. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm like, well, I have to go over here because this is where everyone's posting the interesting things I want to see. So that's why I've always been really in the past, like, I guess 2 or 3 years now, ever since I quit Twitter, is just try to, yeah, post everything I'm working on every day. Probably too much, because I'm just like, I work in the open, but. You know, maybe it's probably doing disservice in Oster, because some people are like, oh God, he's posting some crazy shit again, and they end up going away back to the X. But no, but I think it's like people who post better content is hopefully will it be the people who are attracting everyone else. So I'm not good at influencing. I'm just good at posting crazy shit.
Yeah, but like, influencing takes different forms, right? And I think it's become such like a dirty word too. You know, like, what does it actually mean? It means that like, whatever you say and do, people pay attention to. Like, you obviously, like, you are more than, I'm not going to call you like you're just an influencer. You're obviously a developer who's actually building cool shit. But like, you do also influence people, like, very obviously, like, you've influenced people enough where you have a whole team around you building this open source, you know, tech stack. Like, that, I don't know what that is if not having influence. And like, I think it's fucking cool. You influence me, Wild Bill. So there's that.
Well, I always say that, like, I agree that it has become like a derogatory term almost, but you're absolutely right. It's like, it's impossible not to, anytime you put something into the internet, even if you don't think you're influencing people, it's like, you're literally influencing people. Like every time that note goes into every brain, it's an influencing that brain in some way. It's like either making them happy, making them sad, making them angry. It's like impossible not to influence people, even if, so I don't know, everyone's an influencer.
it makes you, makes you kind of be a little bit more, I guess, mindful of what you're putting out there too. Like, knowing that whatever you do is going to have some sort of impact on people. I myself am guilty of not being super mindful about that sometimes, because I'm just like, hey, I'm just going to troll. Yeah, got him. But you know, I do find that I'm at the same time more mindful of what I put out, but also more free on Oster. And I think this has been a common experience for a lot of people, is that they feel that, like, you can just kind of be like, you don't have to be anything but yourself. Like, there's, because honestly, like, authenticity is rewarded on Noster and fakeness is rejected. Like you see, that's why a lot of people like bigger account, you know, quote bigger accounts, like kind of, you know, maybe came and went from Noster, but like, you know, you've got folks that are, have came and stayed, like, you know, like Lynn Alden, for example, who posts stuff exclusively to Noster, like very unfiltered thoughts on there. I mean, Jack, as another great example, huge, I mean, you know, a very well-known person who has spent a lot of time on Noster posting thoughts that are exclusively found there. Like that, you know, and people have come over specifically to be able to partake in those, you know, unrestricted thoughts that people like Jack and Lynn, but also that people with way smaller, you know, followings have put out there. So like, I think that's good. Like we, content creators are ultimately, or not just content creator. Like, again, that's that word feels like all these words feel dirty now. Like we're all just people, right? But like people have followings now in cyberspace. And if you have a large following in cyberspace and you bring that following over to Noster, that will help grow Noster, like full stop. Like, so I hope we continue to see more of that. I think it's honestly going to take another round of vicious censorship and crackdowns. Did you see any spikes like recently in the UK? Or
I think so. I mean, I've definitely noticed a lot more people on the network. And I assume that's because, especially like I did that tweet about like scanning the anus or whatever. For some reason that like went viral on Noster. Like, I think the post was like, oh yeah, they're going to start scanning your face and anus. So apparently people, that really resonated with people because it's true. It's kind of like, that's what it feels like. They're just like, it's so invasive. And the things they're doing feels so unnatural as like they're just being gross. Right. But it's true that like what you're saying about the whole reputation and like you can't being fake. It's like reputation is everything. It's, you know, your identity is tied to your key. There's no algorithms that can like pump. So like one of the first things that a few influencers and like not influencers, but like basically content. Oh God, I can't even use the word. But content creators, that they came to me and they're like, how do I go viral on your platform? Like, what do I have to do? How do I like game the algorithm so that I get. And like that was their mentality, because like that's how they operated on Instagram or whatever, but like that's how they get influence. But they don't get it through authenticity. They don't get it through interesting content, sure, but they rely a lot on those algorithms to kind of pump their content. But on Noster, it's like you kind of really have to rely on like your reputation is everything. And the minute you trash your reputation, which is tied to a key, like a publicly verifiable key, it's like. Then you kind of like you lose. I don't know, that's the most important thing. So I don't know. I feel like a lot of people are a lot more authentic on Noster, and that's honestly just made the network feel more like a community of people who are just like real people, and not just like this fake games that people are playing just to go viral and just to get in fights and stuff. I don't know. So it feels much more like a human network.
Yeah, it's like if you're fake, it's like you're like literally cryptographically signing away your soul. Like it's like you just sold your soul and put your cryptographic signature on it. So like everybody now, you know, can see that. Yeah, it's not. I mean, I think that the growth is honestly going to be fairly slow and steady still with these kind of pumps as we saw. But I'm also hopeful that like the great thing about the fiat world is like, man, governments just love to do stupid totalitarian shit. So like, I think that's only going to accelerate ultimately. And so maybe we get a lot faster growth than we think. And in the meantime, like all of these incredible tools, like the tools that you were building, like the tools that so many open source devs are building, these tools are getting better and better and better every day and finding new ways to, you know, be interoperable together. And like that, like Noster is ready for, you know, larger adoption now. Like for a while, like it kind of, you know, like wasn't like, you've been there since the beginning, you know, like things were quick and dirty, you know, but like the experience is just night and day different now. And so if somebody's listening to this and they've made it this far and they checked out Noster like a year ago or like 2 years ago and said, oh, this isn't, I don't like this. Like just try it again, you know? And if you don't like the client that you tried, try a different one, you know, try Domus, try other ones. Like, that's the great thing. There's optionality. Like you can choose.
There's so many options.
There's so many options.
Like, there's Jumble Social, which everyone really likes right now.
I haven't used that one yet.
Oh, it's like, it's kind of the new hotness. Yeah. Oh, Jumble.social.
I'm behind the times. Jeez.
They have like a really cool, like two panel display where you can like scroll on one and click it and opens up on the other side. Like I want to steal so many things, and they have like a relay viewer and stuff. I'm like, I really like that idea. I don't know. It's just like really, people are building good stuff.
I love it. Is there anything else that you're working on that you want to talk about? I've kept you here for a while, so just but want to make sure, like, if there's anything else you want to tease, anything else you want to preview. Obviously, people should go check out Domus and use it. It's a great client. It's a client that I use every single day. I am not paid to say that either. Just sure. like I'm not paid to drink Peony Lane wine, but I sure am given it by
you would
by
like
Ben.
Some more bottles in the future.
And I hope I did good, Ben, because boy, this wine is excellent. But where what else do you want people to know, or where do you want to send people? Shill anything and everything.
Yeah, so I highly recommend trying out our new client. It works on the desktop. You can go to domus.io/notedeck to download it. Although that build is old, I should probably push a new build. at the end of the month, I will be announcing a new client that runs on mobiles, and you can probably guess which mobile client that is. So come check it out, Bitcoin Asia. And you know, our future prospects for NoteDeck are a little. There's a lot. Like I think I've talked about it before, but it's not just another client. It's going to be a new type of platform for building Nostra apps. Yeah, definitely check it out. You'll get a sense of it when you download it, because we have like an AI agent inside of it. It's kind of like Grok for Nostr. I'm building this like tool that you can like, you know, kind of, if anyone's ever used Obsidian, it's like Obsidian on Nostr. I have a built-in Lightning Node Manager in it now. So it's basically like an app browser for Nostr that's like going to support dynamic loading of apps. Anyway, so it's like, it's really cool. New technology. Check it out. And you can follow me on Nostr, JB55 at JB55.com. It's my Nostr address. So, yeah.
Oh, man. Thanks so much for coming on again. This was it was long overdue. It's always great chatting with you. I will not be at Bitcoin Asia, unfortunately. I'll have to check out the stream. But hopefully we get a chance to reconvene in the flesh again soon. Have a drink together in person.
Absolutely.
Maybe even
hopefully
a
send me.
No,
I was going to say,
just right, man. That
good man, seeing you. Really,
thanks so much, and thank you to everybody who joined in on the live stream. I appreciate you guys. If you want to watch the show live, the only place you can do that is on Nostr. So go and check out Nostr and come and watch this show live in the future. Yeah, and thank you to everybody who joined, and thank you to everybody who zapped too. 5,282 sats. That's pretty cool.
Wow, that's generational wealth.
That's nice. I'm going to go zap it all away now and you know, pay it forward. But
on
hey,
PNY. Yeah,
on the... Maybe. All right, man. Cheers.
All right. Cheers. Bye.
And that's a wrap on this Bitcoin Talk episode of the Bitcoin Podcast. Remember to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're watching or listening, and share it with your friends, family, and strangers on the internet. Find me on Nostr at primal.net/walker and this podcast at primal.net/titcoin. On X, YouTube, and Rumble, just search at Walker America. And find this podcast on X and Instagram at Titcoin Podcast. Head to the show notes to grab sponsor links. Head to substack.com/@WalkerAmerica to get episodes emailed to you. And head to bitcoinpodcast.net for everything else. Bitcoin is scarce, but podcasts are abundant. So thank you for spending your scarce time listening to the Bitcoin Podcast. Until next time, stay free.